The DeFalco Files is an entertainment-based program. Some memories of certain events might be fuzzy. All opinions are that of the host. Content might not be appropriate for children and some adults. Listener discretion is advised. And remember, the truth is here. Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting presents The DeFalco Files with FSW owner Joe DeFalco and your host, Matt Michaels.
Hey everybody, Matt Michaels here, and this is The DeFalco Files with the one and only Joe DeFalco, the owner and creator of Future Stars Wrestling, FSW, here in Las Vegas. Joe, how are you doing today?
Well, I'm doing all right, you know, considering you booked the bottom of the barrel today with Ricky Tenacious. So it's like, all right, thank you and good night. You know what I mean?
Well, hey, if I'm gonna be the bottom of the barrel, at least I'm gonna be the bottom of the barrel of maybe a rather expensive wine or something you don't find very often, a rare liquid or a rare substance. You know, I mean, if you want to call me bottom of the barrel, whatever, Joe, sure. But I mean, you know, it's going to be some expensive Chardonnay you're talking about, okay? How's it going, Mike?
It's Matt, by the way.
Oh, Matt, Mike, Matt, Mitch, Mark?
Yeah, you're,
I don't know.
You're close.
I just see M's. I see Matt close. Michaels. I'm going to call him Michael Matt. Sorry, this is my first time here. Sorry, rough crowd.
You know.
Well,
try to act like you've been here before, okay?
I know
it's a great moment for you.
That's it. We're providing moments. And for anyone who is a wrestling fan who might live outside of the Vegas area, we're talking with Ricky Tenacious, the songbird of wrestling. And
when you say the songbird of wrestling, you got to say it like the songbird of wrestling. Like, you got to put some depth in the song part of it. You know, you got to put some panache.
Okay, the songbird of wrestling.
That was kind of better.
There you go.
That's kind of better. I dig it.
Don't let them bully you, Matt, into doing things you don't want to do, okay? You're the host, you know. Don't be like that Wallace guy in the debates. You know what I'm saying? Don't let people walk all over you.
Well, you know, when listeners are just finding out about Ricky Tenacious, the first thing that everyone should know is Ricky is probably the most beloved, despised person in all of Las Vegas, I'd say. He's gotten his following by becoming such a heel that I would say Ricky doesn't even really know how much the crowd hates him because he thinks they love him so much. So, with that in mind,
they do love me.
Of
you
course.
Know? If they boo me, they're only booing me because they can't do what I do. They don't have the voice. They don't have the entertainment skills, you know?
Well,
anyway, as you were saying, Matt.
You know, getting to the voice and entertainment skills, let's get a little bit into this idea of when you decided to start becoming a wrestler. What was your process in terms of how old were you, and when was your first time and your first memory of meeting Joe DeFalco?
Oh, man. Well, as far as like getting into wrestling, I mean, my story is pretty similar to most wrestlers. You know, I was like 4 or 5 years old, and my dad and my brother were watching Monday Night Raw. And I remember, being the young kid I was, I really liked the intro video they had for the show.
Sure.
That really got me into it. And I don't know, it was just kind of like wrestling was just always on in my house, you know? So it wasn't always something, it wasn't immediately something I caught on to, but it was something I wanted to be part of because, I mean, it was like my dad and my brother watched it. So it was like, you know, I might as well join in. And so, and just more I watched, like the more I got into it. Like, if you asked me like what it is I love about wrestling or like what it is I got, like why I got into wrestling, like I don't even think I could give you one answer. You know, it was just everything about it. I just watching the show, I just loved the theatrics. I loved how it made me feel. And I guess you could say that it just made me want to do that so I can make people feel how wrestling made me feel. That's pretty much how it started. And then as far as, like, how I met Joe DeFalco, I mean, FSW's been in town for over 10 years now. And I think he might remember, but I was actually at the very first FSW show in that hot swap meet with my dad, because there was wrestling. I mean, if there's wrestling in town, like, you go to see a wrestling show. There wasn't a lot of wrestling back then in the day, let alone independent wrestling. So we went, and I'm pretty sure I saw him there walking around, you know. But I think as far as, like, the first time I, like, met Joe DeFalco, it was probably either at a show, just like a quick high, or I know there was one time I went into the FSW kids class to check it out.
That's what I remember.
Yeah, I was already training at another school, but the way it worked, I would train. I was on and off. I would train in wrestling, pro wrestling, for 3 months, 3 or 4 months, and then I would do amateur wrestling for 9 months. So I couldn't really do both at the same time. It was schooling because I was still a kid, you know. And so on that off time, I went and visited FSW, saw what it was like. I remember Joe was there with Tommy Z, and I was just rolling around. I remember the ring was quite different from what I was used to. I was used to six sides. And, yeah, I mean, I saw him there, and, you know, he was excited to promote his next show. And, you know, and then I didn't really meet him again until I started working for him, as far as I can remember.
Joe, what's your memories of that? And was it, to you, did you just see a kid rolling around in the ring? Did you see someone who actually enjoyed what he was doing? Did you think that that kid could potentially become a wrestler?
Well, I remember his dad walked in with him and his sister, Ricky and his sister. And I'm not sure how old Ricky was, because it was at the Boulder Highway School. So I'm going to guess it was about 2011. And all I remember was how good his sister was doing bumps. And she was probably 10, 11 years old at most. And, you know, Ricky was also good for, you know, how old were you in 2011? 12, 13?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
And I just remember, like, holy shit, this girl is really good. She's like 9 and years old. And, you know, as time passed, you later realized, hey, they had a ring in their backyard. So obviously they weren't just like magically gifted to take bumps. You know, they had actually been doing it, and they were far, you know, more advanced than somebody who would normally start in a kids class. And, you know, after that, I didn't really see him that much. I don't remember that at the swap meet, because, you know, we actually had a good amount of people there.
Right.
And it was hot as fuck in that place.
Yeah. And sweating. I think the biggest pop for that, or one of the biggest pops for that show, was when you brought out the fan. I think for a time there was no fan. Somebody pushed one in, and the entire audience, big cheer, big pop from the audience. Yeah, fan, air conditioning, yes.
Yeah, so, unfortunately the swamp coolers were down. They brought in a portable one that probably knocked it down from 130 to about 122. So, you know, That was, you know, the first moments of FSW. And, you know, we went on, we did our thing. And, you know, I know it was a while later before Ricky started coming around.
Ricky, what was the genesis of Big Valley Wrestling? Did that come about in terms of before you started working with FSW? Did that company start up? How did that come about?
The way I look at it now is, I think the genesis of Big Valley really started the day that I told my dad I wanted to be a wrestler. I mean, I think that a big part of why he wanted to promote was just the love and the passion that I had for it, and that we shared for it, and that he enjoyed seeing me, you know, be happy from wrestling and learning new things and meeting new people, that he wanted to create that for other people. There were several very ambitious wrestlers out there that he knew of and that he felt he could help. As far as like how it, like, when it officially started, I was training at a school called Adrenaline Unleashed, which was at the time it was just AU and FSW back in the day. And Adrenaline eventually closed down. They closed their doors, and there was a group of wrestlers who you know were kind of down about that and didn't exactly want AU to end. But I mean, you know, that's someone else's baby. So, but my dad at the time had always been talking about. He already had business experience, and he had already had experience being around wrestling with Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling, and you know he was getting older, so you know he's got to delve into something else, you know, and so it just seemed like the opportunity was there. You know, we had a group of guys who needed a place to wrestle. We had somebody who was willing to fund a promotion, you know, and we had just purchased a ring, so it just kind of felt like. It was what we should do at that time, you know, and it all started in our backyard too. I mean, that's the only place we had at that time until we got a venue or a space a few months later. But yeah, I mean, I'd say conceptually it all really just started with just watching wrestling with my dad and seeing how much joy it brought us, you know, and then it evolved into all these other guys who could really use the help and could really use a place to, learn and, you know, get better and start a career for themselves and make the connection somewhere. You know, there's a lot of guys in Vegas that got their start at Big Valley before they went to FSW, before they just went elsewhere, just, you know, for anything for that matter. Shade, Shaggy, Sky High, I believe, myself, a few others to name, you know. So that's pretty much where it started.
Joe, do you remember seeing Big Valley start up, and was this something that you thought of as, you know, just another company starting up that would not really be competition, but just kind of fold quickly because of how hard it is to run a promotion?
To be honest with you, we have already had our negative dealings with Adrenaline Unleashed with the owner there, you know.
Sure.
He a lot of negative things to say to us. Guys like Tyshawn Prince and Cash, who were like mainstays there, we had actually used them at a Silver Nugget show, and he basically banned them from wrestling elsewhere. And at the time, he was just doing shows at the Extreme thing, and he was doing like one show a year. And financially, AU did way better than us because we sunk a lot of money into starting FSW. And the owner of AU was more concerned on, and hey, it's a business. He just wanted to make money. So he rented a small spot, and he would run one show a year that would get paid really, really well for. And he would have negative things to say. Joe DeFalco doesn't pay people, you know, things to where Tyshawn and Cash. Because I remember Kid Vegas got the whole crew, Tommy Misfit, Lex Luco, a lot of their...
Hey, Lex Luco.
Yes, Cody, Bryce Slavin. You know, they were all part of our first couple of shows.
Yeah, and, that's right. That's right. Hey, know, I don't mean to cut you off, Joe, but I do want to mention that AU did have a lot. They trained a lot of guys that, as Joe is saying, like, you know, became like big stars in Las Vegas wrestling. I'm thankful to be part of that circle as well. I don't think I've exactly met my climax in my career yet, but I think I'm getting there. Go ahead, Joe. Sorry about that.
And, you know, and going back to that, you know, I went to AU probably 2 or 3 weeks before we did our very first show because we didn't have a school. We weren't even planning on doing a school. And it was like I went to see Kent, the owner, and it's like, hey, we're doing a show Memorial Day weekend. It was 2009, and we were doing a battle royal, and we were looking to fill some spots. And it was like, hey, you're the school in town, you know, maybe guys you'd like to send over. And one thing I remember him saying is, well, yeah, you need to talk to the guys. So then I talked to the guys, and Bryce Slavin and Cody came over to do the battle royal. And we always talk about Cody getting choke slammed out of the Battle Royal by Reno Tafuli. And that's how Crash Test got created. But I remember he said to Kent, you know, because Kent didn't ask. He didn't give a shit about our show or anything. And Cody was like, yeah, everything went good. There was a good crowd, blah, blah, blah. And as Cody was looking for something from his trainer that, you know, would solidify, hey, good work, you got on a show. His response was, well, I'd never do a show at a swap meet. And it's like, coming from a guy who doesn't do any fucking shows, you're doing one where you don't pay anybody and you're getting like $5,000 for the show. And you brought in like Scorpio Sky and the Young Bucks, who we did with the Young Bucks. So they weren't getting their thousands of dollars back then. You know, they were $75 when I brought him in for the swap meet show.
Sure.
So, you know, here was a guy who just had nothing positive to say. And even when he was talking to me, as I was trying to explain to him what we were doing, he was explaining to us how he's going to this facility and they're going to run this and they're going to do that and they're going to do the other things. And it's like, awesome. That's great for you. I was just seeing if you wanted to have some guys on the show. Fast forward to the first Silver Nugget show where Cash and Tommy Misfit and Misfit wrestled Luco in a dark match. Somebody didn't show up. So Cash teamed up with, I think, Andrew Hellman and got to wrestle the Von Dooms. That was the Splat Pack days where I was trying to make Tyshawn Prince Slammy Davis Jr. And we had talked, and then he never showed up. And then later on, we found out that basically Kent put the kibosh on all those guys. This was when MySpace was prevalent. So I would talk to Misfit all the time, and I would talk to Lex Luco, and they were all excited because they were working, if they were lucky, one show a year.
Wow.
And so there was a lot of negativity moving forward after AU kind of went belly up. So, you know, some of the guys came over to our place, but a lot of them were in limbo. And I remember with Big Valley starting, there was a core of guys that stayed over there and then wrestled those shows. And then, you know, it was years later where a guy like Tommy Misfit, who became Thomas Day, really became a part of FSW. And from what we heard, you know, a lot of people were worried that coming over, we were going to bury them because, hey, they're from AU. We're going to have to teach these guys a lesson. And I remember with Tyshawn Prince, there was a lot of people in our camp that when we brought this monster over, it would be like, hey, we need to humble this guy. And it's like, you do know if I have him job out to Kid Vegas, it can't make the guy a monster anymore. It's like, this guy is a monster. He hasn't been seen by the majority of fans of FSW or wrestling fans in Vegas. So when Tyshawn Prince came in, you know, he was the monster before Kevin Cross ever became one.
That makes a lot of sense. Ricky, do you remember when Big Valley started, AU ends, Big Valley starts, what was the mood around those guys who now were going to go to Big Valley? Was there any talk of, you know, FSW, of Joe? Was there any kind of cliquishness? What was happening in the beginnings of, you know, that group of people coming into Big Valley?
Well, what happened in the beginning was, I mean, everybody was just trying to figure things out, you know? I mean, you got to understand, like, you know, from, like, what Joe just talked about with AU, you know, you got to understand, like, for me at that time, I was still a kid, you know? I was still a teenager. I didn't understand how any of that worked. I didn't care about any of that worked. All I cared about was I want to wrestle. I want to have fun. I want to wrestle. I want to wrestle with my friends. You know, I want to put on a show. I want to have a good time doing it. You know, so when Big Valley first started up, like, you know, we knew that being like the new company in town, like, you know, we were going to have some eyes on us. There were going to be some people talking. They're going to be watching, you know, see what it is we do. But, you know, over the years, especially now, just being a wrestler, just running a promotion, like, so something I've realized is, you know, the best competition is really just yourself. You can, you know, really just worry about yourself. So that's really what we were doing. You know, we were just, our main concern was just making sure the guys that we had starting out with were happy, that, you know, that we could give them something to look forward to, which we did. We were able to get a show Some of the guys from AU that had gone over to FSW, like Tyshawn Prince or like Cash, there was a Suede Thompson as well. You know, I don't know. I feel like they kind of wanted everyone to go over to FSW just because they felt like FSW was better training wise. And I didn't really get that at the time. I get it now, 'cause I train there. They have a terrific school and all that, you know, but for the most part, man, we were just trying to start up. We were just trying to get the first foot moving, you know. We did some shows, you know. The first few ones weren't by any means the best, you know, but you got to start somewhere. And yeah, we were just trying to figure out, you know, what the best way was to run a company, what the best way was to build our fan base. You know, we had some rest, like we had Greg Romero was on one of our first shows. He came over and then he went back to FSW. You know, I mean, as I said, over the years, you know, we just kind of learned that, you know, people want to wrestle somewhere, they're going to go wrestle somewhere, you know, especially for me and my dad, like we've never really tried to create any conflicts. At the end of the day, we just kind of wanted to worry about ourselves, you know, but as Joe said, you know, everyone's just trying to run a business, you know, and AU, although they only ran one show, like they were better financially at that time, you know. That's just how professional wrestling business goes. You know, you put a lot of money into it, and I'm very grateful for Joe and Rocky to do that, to contribute to the pro wrestling community here in Vegas and help so many guys out. You know, and that's essentially what Big Valley was trying to do. We saw a group of guys that weren't really sure what to do at that time or felt like they could be part of something new, and we were trying to help them with that, you know. And I think and I think we definitely accomplished that. You know, we had Bryce Slavin with us. He was one of our first trainers. He helped us out a lot. He had a lot of really good teachings to give us, you know. He was we needed that leader in the locker room, and over time that leader became different people, you know. So to answer your question, like as far as when we first started up, we didn't really have a big relationship with FSW. We weren't communicating a lot because we were just focused on what we were doing. Not to say that we wouldn't have been down to do that, you know, but for the most part, you know, when you're starting a promotion or really any business at all, it's a whole different monster. You know, you really have a lot of things you're thinking of. You have people depending on you. You got to think about yourself. Where are you going to be in a year? You know, there's a lot going on. You know, it's far more simpler nowadays, you know, fast forward nearly 6 years later of Big Valley being open, you know.
Right.
But, yeah.
Joe, you know, Ricky brought up a point of the AU people who eventually would go into FSW and him himself saying FSW has great training. How hard is it for people who have learned one way to then go to another school and get, you know, I don't want to say proper training, but is there a lot of stuff that has to be undone in terms of certain habits that they might have picked up that might have not been the correct, you know, teachings?
I would say when it comes to actual training in the ring, absolutely not. But the problem was FSW was so considered the bad guy. They're assholes. They're this. Those guys weren't really excited about coming over to FSW. You know, they felt they would be mistreated. They felt they wouldn't be taken care of. And, you know, in all honesty, when they opened up, it was disappointing because as a business, you know, 5-6 years ago, the school, I've always said from day one, has been the money pit.
Right.
That you just can't bring in enough paying students. You get the students, they drop out. Who can't pay? Blah, blah, blah. So we looked at AU closing as a way for us to bring in 10, 15 new students. Right. But instead, we probably initially brought in 4 or 5 maybe. And that was money out of our pocket that we could have turned around and me and Rocky could have put some money in our pocket. We have guys that are semi-trained, ready to go in. And I think because their owner, their boss, Kent, you know, put into everybody's head and he was a trusted figure to those guys.
Right.
You know, I talked with Tyshawn, and I talked with Thomas Day, and I talked with a lot of the guys, and, you know, I wouldn't want to go over to that place from the stories I heard from a guy. But when people ask me about it, I tell them the one meeting I had with Kent was when I tried to bring guys over, you know, and unfortunately it put a stigma on us, and guys were looking for an alternative. So, you know, there was nothing you can do about it. Was I excited that another company was going to try and run? Of course not. You know, we're running this town, you know, it's like any fan, like my biggest issue has always been trying to build the Vegas market.
Right.
And if everything's properly promoted, we had Chris Bay. He was our guy. He still worked over Big Valley. But it's like, if you guys are going to work over there, you know, we really need them to communicate with the fans that they did have. Sure, there's a bunch of the fans that are our regulars that are regulars for every wrestling show. But there's also other people that might go to Big Valley that are unaware of FSW because it is Vegas. It's a transient market. It's like, how about we get some of those people to come over here to FSW, and how do we do that? You know, looking back, you know, Big Valley brought in Beast to do some work with them and stuff like that. And it would have been like, well, being that you're using a lot of our guys, it would have been cool if we had more of a working relationship to where 12 of our guys work there anyway.
Right.
You know, I've never been the guy to say, oh, if you work there, you can't work anywhere else. And, you know, now there's three companies that are trying to get rolling. And it's like, I've talked to our guys, and it's, if you're in a situation where you're working a place and you're just jobbing out to all their guys, your value to me is non-existent.
Yeah.
If I put you in a good position and then you go over to say Versus and you're our number four tag team and you're losing to their guys, well, how helpful is it? It's a lot of the same fans. So if their guys beat our number four team, who beat our number five team and seven team and eight team and nine team, well, how good is our number four team?
Yeah.
You know? So there's trying to keep that happy medium of Ricky uses a lot of younger guys, which is great. It's about experience. It's about how many getting matches under your belt. Even though we run a lot. That's the
best experience right there.
You know, in front of a live crowd. Unfortunately, the politics step in, you know, not saying Ricky does it, but I know for sure there's places that are like, oh, okay, they're doing good in FSW, you know, we're going to job them out.
Yeah.
And it even goes back to when Legacy ran his company.
He did
a four-way elimination match, for example. Our champion at the time was Kenny King. Well, guess what? Kenny King and Jason Partain got down to the final two, and Jason Partain pinned Kenny King. Why? Because that's what Legacy wanted. It didn't matter that he was the FSW heavyweight champion. Again, did I like that? No, but I was there and I was at the show, and I understood there's nothing I can do about it.
Right.
That's the way it is. And that's why I try to be protective of what we got going and what we're doing. You know, if you're going to go somewhere and work, make sure you're put in a good position. Even for the younger guys, make sure you're working somebody who's been trained. Make sure you're working somebody who knows what they're doing, because you're going to risk getting hurt if you're working somebody that isn't really good enough and shouldn't be on a show.
Ricky, when you started getting in the ring, was there a feeling of the guys who were at Big Valley of any animosity of the fact that you were the promoter's son, essentially, and for instance, you had that title, did anyone look at you in a light of, fuck that guy, you know, he's just in this kind of for himself? And did anything like that ever follow you when you've tried to go to other, you know, venues to wrestle?
I just let my actions speak louder than anybody else's words. You know, I mean, you can say whatever you want about me. Just watch my match, and then maybe your opinion will change. You know, do you think I've got those pops and I got those reactions and I look the way I do because of my dad, or do you think I did that because I'm in the ring? You know, I mean, regardless of what it is I do, if that's how people want to think, that's just how they're going to think. You know, I don't need to be concerned about, you know, other people's words or, you know, other people's ideas or their assumptions of who I am. I know who I am, and I'm just going to show everybody who I am and why I am that person. You know, I'm somebody who doesn't really let a lot of that stuff bother me. You know, I know it's there. I've always known it's going to be there. It's kind of came with it. You know, but as I said, I'm just letting my actions speak louder than anybody else's words. You know, that's just the only way I can really go about it. As far as like animosity, I mean, there have been times like close people have told me that there are people who don't like me. There are people who have these assumptions of me, you know, and that'll, if anything, it just fuels me. It just fuels me to be better than anything that they could have ever thought of, you know, so. It's just, if anything, you know, you take those negatives and you turn it into a positive.
Joe, when Ricky says it fuels him, did you see that desire in him when he first came, you know, in your lights in terms of FSW using him and him training a little bit at FSW? Did you see that he had passion there and kind of that's what the guiding light was to kind of bring him into the FSW fold, is the potential?
Well, the reason we kind of brought him into FSW was we actually had no ring announcer, and Ricky stepped up and, you know,
helped in the door somehow.
And, you know, he did stuff at Silverton and he did things. And I'm always big on trying to reward people who help us out. And since he helped us out in that situation, it gave him an opportunity, like he said, to get a foot in the door. And, you know, he works hard. He does his thing. You know, initially he was in a tag team. And I remember telling his partner, it was like, hey, I might have to use you in some singles stuff because Ricky's doing his thing over there. He's not really training. And then it kind of became a total opposite where, you know, Ricky's desire and passion, you know, overshadowed everything else. And it was like, you know, it shows that I don't have any issues because he basically is part running Big Valley and I utilize him on more shows than a lot of our regular students. So, you know, I wouldn't do that just because I'm a nice guy. I would do it because he's deserving of the spot. And to be honest with you, you know, he's kind of similar to the early days of Crash Test Cody, to where he's the lovable loser. You know, I know some of his friends get offended by the things I would say about him on Twitch or a broadcast, but it's the character he's portraying.
Yeah.
And I forgot, but I thought it was professional wrestling. And when you bury a guy who's not winning matches or ever winning matches and he's losing, and you talk about how he does stupid shit to cost him the victory, you know, I guess it's great that his friends are that passionate. Usually it's friends that actually wrestle that are that passionate about how he's being portrayed. But that's how his character was being used in FSW. And he's evolved a lot over the last year. He's gotten very comfortable with his character. You know, we recently did our TV taping and we were in a situation where we needed Ricky to do some business and he wrestled Shogun at the tapings and he did exactly what we needed him to do. You know, sometimes he goes a little long, but you know, it is what it is. But the fact of the matter is he got over what we needed to do. Every match can't be exactly the same. Sometimes like a Mike Delight, he or a dress. That was his gimmick. When he didn't want to wear the dress anymore, people really didn't care for him that much, and he begged to get back into the dress. The bottom line is being an entertainer and being part of the show. Too many people are just concerned with everything they're going to do and how they're being perceived. And the fact of the matter is, certain guys aren't Hammerstone. They're not Cross. They're not Chris Bay. But they have a valuable role that we need. And if you're not comfortable with that role, then I guess you need to go elsewhere. But Ricky takes what he gets. You know, he asks for things. He'll message me and, hey, is it okay if I do this? Hey, is it okay if I do that? You know, sometimes I say yes, sometimes I say no. But I definitely will listen to when people have an idea of what they're trying to do to better their character.
Ricky, what do you think is the cornerstone of the character? Is it, you know, is it the singing, or is it the, one of the things I think you've really grown a lot in the past year on is knowing the reactions in the ring that you need to get. You know, it's easy to come out and sing and piss people off, you know. But the actual matches, you're starting to really show that your work rate is getting, you know, tons better than I think that fans even expect. And as that happens, you're going to see that fans are going to start getting behind Tenacious, even though you're still trying to be a heel. What has it been in terms of that evolution for you? Are you getting comfortable?
Actually, before he answers, mm-hmm. I was told that a couple of weeks ago, Cody put over that Ricky had a fantastic match with the Invisible Man.
That is true. That is true. That I don't know. If you want to maybe book that sometime, Joe, I mean, I'm down for round two. I can go a lot more than 3 minutes. There have been some people expressing interest in seeing that match. But for what it was, there was a beef. All right. I'll try to be as nice as I can, especially at training. But he ran his mouth a little bit too much, and I said, all right, let's see what we're going to do. And we went in there, and we put on what a lot of people call the banger, especially good
even the Suavecito said it was the banger of the night.
It was. It could be the banger of the show if you book it sometime. Who knows? But to answer your question, Matt, the cornerstone, well, I personally – have always been a natural born entertainer, a natural born performer. The number one fear among people is public speaking. And that's never been a fear for me. I mean, there's been times where I might not know what the right thing to say is in front of a bunch of people. But as far as being in front of an audience, that's where I'm home. That's where, you know, like when I was offered the opportunity to be an announcer, you know, there was not one shred of doubt in my mind. I flubbed up a few words. Who doesn't their first time? But the thought, oh, you want me to go out there in front of a packed Silverton crowd and basically host the show? Yeah, that sounds like the job for me. I can do that for you. You know, and I'll have a good time doing it. You know, whenever there's an opportunity for me to be on stage and to entertain, you know, I always see it as an opportunity for me to evolve myself and be – as you can say, the party in the room or the person that people remember the most. But as far as like my character, just over the years of watching live wrestling, I've always tried to be the wrestler that I wish I could have seen or that I could have experienced. I don't really think of wrestling as something you just watch. It's something you have to feel and something you experience. And that's what I try to make Ricky Tenacious every time I go out there. When I go out there, my goal is to try to have the loudest match of the night. Not the best match, the loudest match, okay? That people are, if they're interacting, if they're making noises, if they're cheering or booing, as far as I'm concerned, I'm doing my job. I am serving this show well right now because these, if they're interacting and they're responding, it means they're invested, you know? And if a crowd isn't invested, if they're not participating, what are you really doing? I know there's different wrestlers out there, some who like to focus more on the technical aspect. They work for the applause, you know, and I work for the applause too, but on a different level. You know, I want to entertain. I want to give people an experience that'll make them laugh, that'll make them cry, that'll make them cheer. You know, on wrestling shows, you have to have variety, and I'm sure me and Joe both know that. You know, running shows, like, you know, you want the wrestler that's going to make people laugh. You want the wrestler that's going to make people boo. The person that's going to make people cheer. The person that's going to get people a little confused or make them feel, you know, like this person's mysterious or whatever, you know. And so as far as my character goes, like the singing and being loud, that's more so just who I am as a person. I have a huge theater background. I've always been in plays. As I said, if there's an audience to perform in front of, there's Ricky Tenacious on the stage, you know. So that's just always been where I felt at home. And, you know, I feel like what I've been doing has really been working, as you've said, Matt, and as Joe referenced as well. You know, I feel like when a Ricky Tenacious match happens, it's just not the same as any other match. You know, you react a little bit more. You think a little bit more. You're invested a little bit. You leave that match feeling entertained. You know, and that's, at the end of the day, that's what I want, and that's what I feel my job is, as not just a professional wrestler, but just as an overall entertainer. And the Songbird gimmick is really just allowed me to be me, because for a big part of my life, there's been plenty of people who just can't deal with how loud I am, or feel like I'm too extra, I'm too obnoxious, but they don't realize it's just how I express myself. And professional wrestling is a stage where I can be who I am. And guys like Joe have given me the opportunity to not only do that, but also be successful at it at the same time. So, it's really just me. It's just me.
If you want to see the improvement, go back a couple of years and watch an exceptional and tenacious match. My goodness, he has improved 20-fold.
Yeah, I mean, I was still figuring things out, you know. I mean, like you said, you know, the best experience is being in front of a live crowd. You know, there's been exceptional and tenacious matches that went really well. There's matches where we were just starting out, especially as a tag team, where it's two people trying to think in the same mind. Like, you know, that's not easy to do. It's not easy to do at all. But it's always a work in progress. You know, whether it be a tag team or singles wrestler.
Honestly, Ricky really stepped up after he got that 170-pound weight off his back. You know what I mean?
Yeah, 200. He's pretty lean.
And I'll give Ricky credit. We were doing what I believe was a Future Shock, and we had no color commentator, and we ended up having Ricky do it, and he did a really, really good job.
That was honestly one of the funnest times I've had at FSW doing commentary with Joe. You should ask me to do that more often, man. I'd love to do it.
Almost did last week. Almost.
Okay. All right. Well, don't close. Don't be afraid.
Yeah.
That close.
It looks like when Future Shocks come about and you need the quick replacement, it's going to be Ricky Tenacious.
Well, we rotated out. We had Leon Hader and we had Cody.
Oh, nice. Yeah, there you go.
You know, we had a few of our juniors division members, Bodie, Dana Lynn, and Davion. We had three of our kids who were from the kids' class who performed. Two of them made their pro wrestling debut, and they did very, very well.
You know, I do want to reference really quick, talking about that weight that was on my back. Although even it was 200 pounds, whatever, you know, the more weight on you only makes you stronger because you have to handle it, you know. And I do want to talk about Exceptional Braven for a second. And I know he hasn't been around very much, but I do want to say that, you know, whether you want to call the matches bad or good or indifferent, whatever it is, tag teaming with Braven was some of the most fun that I've had in my life in general. And whether no matter how you cut it, Exceptional and Tenacious was an idea of Joe's. I remember he put us together. It kind of just went together, you know, and that spawned not just several years of tag teaming, but several years of friendship as well, you know. And I think that's one of the big beauties of wrestling, you know, the friendships and the relationships you create, you know. So although I did have that weight off of me, you know, it's not exactly weight that I would think inconvenienced me, you know, but I think every now and then, you know, sooner or later, a songbird needs to spread his wings and fly solo. So that's kind of what I'm doing.
Little known fact that Exceptional and Tenacious could have been.
Oh, that's right.
Tenacious, right. With Evan Daniels.
We could have. It was going to be Exciting and Tenacious. That's right. That yes. was. I don't think a lot of people know that. Yeah.
Kind of like Wild and Looney.
Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah, Wild and Looney. I remember those days.
Yeah. Let's forget about that one.
You know what's fascinating to me is your one piece Elvis style jumpsuit, Ricky. Who came up with the idea for that? Was that
so? What happened was, I had been in desperate need of new gear, and a lot of people can tell you that.
Yeah, you should have saw his attire as a ring announcer. It was like he got it at the 99-cent store.
It was just it got worn pretty fast, and so I needed new gear. And especially because there was a tryout for Impact Wrestling coming up, sponsored by FSW. And so I knew that I needed something fresh. I needed something new. And I needed something to match what it was I was exhibiting in the ring. You know, I felt like what I was wearing, like, you know, everyone knows who Ricky is, but I feel like what Ricky's wearing doesn't really match what it is he's expressing. And that's a big part of wrestling. Everything has to be, you know, intact like that. From how you look to how you talk to the moves you do to the way you cut your promos.
So you're telling me you didn't buy it on eBay off Sonny Siaki?
No, I didn't. No, I my connections go further than that. So what happened was with this outfit was I actually had somebody. I was in college. I was a theater student, and I actually was teaming with the costume designer at the college to create my new gear. I had a whole design, and we were making it. But unfortunately, the designer his schedule just got flooded, and there's only certain times we're allowed to be in the design room. And so it just became a huge mess. And a week out from this tryout, I had no new gear. And I was like, man, what am I going to do? And so I was telling my dad about it, and he was like, well, I might have something for you. And I was like, yeah, let's see what it is. And he goes into his closet, which is full of all kinds of ballroom dance outfits. My mom and dad were ballroom dancers, champion ballroom dancers, might I add. That's how they met. And he pulls out the now what we know as the Tenacious jumpsuit. And the whole top used to be like really sparkly silver and like, you know, really bright. And I put it on, I took a picture, and I was like, you know, and I just started kind of moving around all tenacious like, and I was like, I think this works. I think this is what I need. And so I, you know, I didn't have anything else. So I, you know, I can make this work, you know? And so I showed up, and I didn't make the tryout. I mean, it was a good experience, but I remember I got a lot of positive feedback. I remember the first show I debuted, everyone was like, this could be the start of something new. And it definitely was. I mean, me and my dad talk about all the time how that suit really upped my game. You know, how you look is a big part of the game, you know. And so the suit really made a big difference because it matched who I was. And people really had a more complete vision of who Ricky Tenacious is. So that it basically... I feel like from the first time my dad put it on 40 years ago, dancing with my mom, you know, it was just meant to be passed down to me, you know. So I am definitely trying to get a new jumpsuit made. This one's a little too black. It's definitely too worn. I've wrestled in it so much. But it's definitely a Hammerstone actually sat down with me once, and he talked to me about how it really helped me out a lot, and how just with, you know, when I, like, if I send a resume to a promoter or whatever the case may be, how I'm trying to get booked, you know, he probably is way more likely to book me if he sees me, or at least look at my footage and consider me, seeing a picture like that, that'll catch your eye and make you stop for a few seconds compared to what I was wearing before, which was rather just generic, but it's what I had at the time. So yeah, I mean, that I'm really happy to have that outfit. I really couldn't see myself wrestling any other way. Maybe a little bit more colorful. Maybe and I don't know if you've been to the FSW shows as of recent, Matt, but I added a sparkly vest. I have a cape now. I'm really starting to up the showmanship that Ricky Tenacious is.
Joe, back in New York in the early 80s, did you ever have anything like that, a jumpsuit that took you out on Friday nights and danced?
No, because A, I was a DJ, so I didn't do the dancing. I made the people dance.
Right.
I was more of the leather pants and lace gloves kind of guy with the little chintzy bracelets. I used to wear them with the mullet back in the day.
A little.
It was over. I tell you, it was over.
A little Rob Halford look with the gloves and the a little Judas Priest going on. I could see that.
I'm not sure it was a Judas Priest look. You know what I mean? His looked more metal-y. It was like more bracelets that were like leather with spikes on them. These were like lace gloves and, you know, those little like gray metal. I don't even know what they are. They were, you know, they were probably 12 for a dollar. You know what I mean?
So more of a Poison.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, Poison, Talk Dirty to Me look. As we wrap up here, I want to ask you, Joe, this is a very serious question, actually. I don't want to make light of this by any means. So, again, please take this seriously. I know through Ricky seeing your social media and knowing a little bit about you, how much your mom meant to you. Joe, when you see Ricky and his growing, do you think that if his mom would be able to see him right now, that she would be extremely proud of what he's been able to do?
I would assume so. You know, here's a guy who, like I said, you know, I saw him at 11, 12, 13 years old before he was part of a kid's class, just came down and try one out. And to see, you know, 9, 10 years later that this young kid has now developed into a regular role in FSW. Now, obviously, we're not the WWE, we're not Impact, Ring of Honor, but we're as good as it gets on the West Coast. And, you know, Ricky is a major part of it. You know, we have a core roster, and it's a list of 20, 25 guys. There's guys that we really only are going to use for future shock. And, you know, Ricky is a guy that in most cases will perform on the bigger shows. You know, he's gotten to perform at Sam's Town. He's gotten to perform at the Silverton, you know, and, you know, he's living his dream. He's getting to go out. He gets to wrestle in front of a lot of people. And I'm pretty sure his mom would be very proud of, you know, what he's done. And, you know, a lot of people forget, you know, Ricky can wrestle, but because of what his character is asked to do, you know, a lot of times he's not going to outshine somebody that in a good amount of cases, he probably could. But he is doing what the company needs him to do, and he does it well. And, you know, you can't ask for somebody to do more than that, you know. And like I said, that's why I'm always appreciative of the people who do what I need them to do. They go out of their way for you. It's not always about a monetary thing. The reason we're all doing this is because of the passion and the love of professional wrestling.
Right.
You know, I always said when I first started that if I got my initial investment back, I'm happy. You know, I worked regular jobs. Wife works a regular job, you know, but, you know, fortunately we've continued to grow and grow and grow. And, you know, we're at the apex of something fantastic. And, you know, hopefully this shit ends with the COVID and we can really start blowing it up. You know, we got so much going on, and, you know, we expect Ricky to be there and, you know, be a part of it.
Ricky, any final words before we let you go here?
Thank you very much, Joe, for those kind words. Thank you, Matt, for having me on. For any viewers, if you want to follow me and learn more about me and know where you can see me perform next, at Songbird of Wrestling on Instagram, Ricky Tenacious on Facebook, and I just started Twitter a little late to the party, but that's at Ricky Espinosa 3. I got to try to change that tag as soon as I can. I only have a few of my Ricky Tenacious Hamilton shirts left. I should get some more made. They're only $20. If you come to a show, you can buy one or hit me up. I also have trading cards as well. And before I sign off here, I do want to ask a question to Joe. And the question is, when are you going to book Ricky Tenacious versus Sandra Moon?
I don't know. You know, a lot of times for matches to happen, you know, generally we're going to need somebody to say, hey, you know, I'd really like at the last show, Lacey Ryan had speculated, Damian Drake, and they asked about having a match. So they were both available, and it was like, hey, you guys want to wrestle? And, of course, they jumped at it and, you know, had a lot of fun because they're training partners pretty much every day down there. You know, now that you brought it up, you know, once we're putting together something on a show, it definitely could be something we can work with. Sandra is, you know, considered one of the top babyface women in FSW. And, you know, it would be fun to watch her beat you up.
Oh, yeah. Okay, that's good. That's good. Yeah, really funny. Yeah, well, we're going to see how that works out when we actually get in the ring. Because I have wrestled with Sandra before at training, and it's just not good enough for me. You know, I think an audience deserves to see such a match like that, you know.
Well, you know, we got Future Shock December 4th, so.
Hey, that sounds like a main event match to me. I don't know about you, but I mean, that sounds like a barn burner.
You know, it could be a main event match, but I decided I'd rather have the Suavecitos in a banger. And, you know, I have no idea who they're going to work, but I know whoever it is, it's going to be a banger, and that probably should main event.
Well, hopefully they'll actually win, so to make it a real good bang.
They're on the verge. They're on the verge.
Yeah, they're getting there.
Have a better win-loss record than them.
Well, Ricky, I'll let you go. You can take care, man. Go do what you need to do. Get that little nose swabbing going on as we all are getting accustomed.
Yeah, crazy times. You know, you want to wrestle, you got to go through the process like everybody. You know, make sure everyone's safe.
So take care of yourself, Joe. Once Ricky signs off here, let's talk a little bit about November 14th and what's coming up this Saturday.
Oh, it's stacked. Right. It's stacked.
I will see you there. Right, thank you very much, gentlemen. Have a good day.
That was less painful than I expected it to be.
Well, Joe, you know, November 14th is coming up here this Saturday. We're finally going to get a chance because of Matt Vandegrift coming back from the injury now to see Death Proof versus the Unguided. Is this something that, you know, is really anticipated in your mind to see how they work together, knowing that Death Proof is the solid veterans and the Unguided are the seasoned youngsters, shall we say, who both teams, all four guys, just work their ass off every time they're in the ring. I couldn't think of a better match for a number one contender for a tag team championship. Are you excited about that? And what else is going on with the talent initiative? And what else can we see on the card on the 14th?
Well, first off, November 14th will be the best card that we have put together since we have come back, you know, without a doubt. You know, we've had some good shows. We've had some very good shows. This show's got numerous, you know, sprinkled along the way since we're doing a TV taping. Because of Christmas, we're going to combine it a little bit. So instead of doing two tapings, we're going to probably do two tapings and a couple of extra matches. But the Unguided and Death Proof, all you need to do is look a few weeks back and watch Damian Drake and Jacob Boston Young.
Yeah.
You know, if that little preview of what we're going to see, that is going to be a match of the year candidate, because that might have been short and sweet, but you could just see those two, great chemistry. You know, Jacob Austin Young, you know, was the first guy many people thought was going to take the No Limits title from Bryce Harrison. As the progression became, there was a lot of talk of Damian Drake replacing Jacob Austin Young in the following. So there is definitely a lot there. And, you know, there's nobody more passionate than Cody. So that's main event one. Then main event two has been brewing since March. And finally they will wrestle. And that's for the No Limits title. That's Ice Williams and Funny Bone. Nice. That's a main event at Sam's Town.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's going to be the main event of another week's taping. Our FS champion, Graves, will be on hand. It's going to be a little bit of a surprise of who he's going to wrestle. So we're going to keep that under wraps, but it is a tremendous talent. Then we have another surprise with a former WWE, Impact, Ring of Honor, Primetime Live. You know, he'll be on hand. We got Hammerstone and Wise Guy. Now, to a lot of people, Wise Guy hasn't been seen that much, and people really, a few are starting to see how good the guy is. So it may not be as anticipated as a lot of other matches, but I'm looking forward. You know, Wise Guy and Remy Marcel was excellent. You know, I haven't seen Hammerstone have a bad match in a while. So you got that. Then we got the Nevada State Tournament semifinals. You know, Remy Marcel and Nino Black. Nino was tag team champion with Chris Bay and defeated the Whirlwind Gentlemen for the titles. So that's an interesting matchup. The shocker was Hiro Lu losing to Watson thanks to Lights, Camera, Faction. So now in the semifinals, Watson is taking on a man who is really making it his mission, because this is the closest he's gotten, hyperstreak of becoming a champion. Not only has he not been a champion in FSW, this guy has wrestled all over the world. And in 9 years, he has never captured a title.
Wow.
So definitely interesting to see hyperstreak go one-on-one with Watson in the semifinals of the Nevada State Tournament. So there are some outstanding matches. We're holding off the women's matches because we're doing the women's show on the 20th, just because this show is just stacked from top to bottom.
Yeah.
You know, the hottest tag team in FSW, the Bad Bitches. You know, they're coming off a win against the RMB. You know, as good as the Bad Bitches have been, that's the signature win for them that has now put them on the map to where, you know, whoever the tag team champions are in 2, 3, 4 months, the Bad Bitches are in line to get a title shot.
Yeah.
They're taking on the Suavecitos, who have been very, very close. You know, they have not captured a win. They're probably the best team that has never won a match.
Yeah.
And they'll tell you they're the best team regardless of not winning a match. You know? So, you know, that's a big match for both teams. Bad Bitches can't slip up after beating R&B and losing to Suavecitos. And how many more losses can the Suavecitos take? You know, we saw a little frustration between them the last time they were, you know, here at FSW. So, you know, this show is going to be stacked from top to bottom. On the 28th, we got another taping. Brian Pillman Jr. is going to be here. The Future Stars Talent Initiative, Tyson Maddox out of Atlanta, Georgia. And also a guy who's making waves all over OVW, all over the Midwest, AJ Z. He's making his debut this Saturday night. And from what I understand, you know, he's got the promo out. He is a very confident fellow. You know, he's not looking for somebody to just beat up. He wants the best of the best in FSW. And I know there's a few guys that are more than willing to step up to the challenge. So, you know, we have limited seats as always. You know, it's for TV. It's week 3, 4, and part of 5. And the show starts at 7 o'clock. And I'm really excited. You know, as much as I'm excited about Unguided and Death Proof, I'm equally as excited about Ice Williams and Funny Bone.
Yeah.
You know, Funny Bone has made a couple surprise appearances. Ice hasn't taken too kindly. Here's a guy that many of the fans have been behind, and Ice has done some things in his past, whether it was with Damian Drake, you know, or even with Funny Bone, where he's really starting to lose some of his fan base, and the majority of fans want to see Funny Bone become the first ever 3-time No Limits champion.
It's amazing how much talent is, you know, showing itself. And like you said, even a team like having the Suavecitos taking on the Bad Bitches, what a great mixture for a match in terms of their talent, their chemistry with each other, you know, being as tag teams, not in the ring per se. But even a match like that just is exciting to hear. When the
Actually, there's one more match I didn't get to. I just remembered it. We had two guys that we brought in for the Future Stars Talent Initiative, and they have exceeded expectations, and now they're going to go one-on-one, Jordynne Cruz and Class, which you know, should be an outstanding matchup. You know, whoever wins this match is really going to solidify themselves on the roster as someone to be reckoned with, you know, for any title that they want to compete for. So, you know, it's just mind-boggling. Creature Feature's not going to be on the show. Wow. Sky High's not going to be on the show. You know, Hero Lou's not scheduled to be on the show. You know, Nick Bugatti's not going to be on the show. There's so much talent that we're unable to put all these guys on, you know. And that was the biggest issue I had with television, that we didn't want to have main guys on once every 4 weeks, once every 5 weeks. But unfortunately, that's how it worked out. You know, we got Hammerstone and Graves coming back, and they're not going to make their debuts on TV to the 3rd or 4th week.
Yeah. And that match, Class versus Cruz, is like, you're going to see that. You could potentially see something like that in NXT in 2 years. That's how talented those two guys are.
Yeah, and you know, we're always searching for that future star. Like I said, this guy Tyson Maddox out of Atlanta, Georgia, is coming in on the 28th with Pillman also. We're talking with other numerous talents that, you know, are dying to make their way back in here. You know, give them a free plug. GCW is going to be out here December 5th. Well, we got a Future Shock December 4th. And instead of just using, you know, our future stars mixed in with some talent, we are in discussions about maybe the Impact champion Rich Swann, you know, making an appearance. Maybe that's a show that we want to showcase to some GCW fans. Jacob Fatu is going to be out there.
Yeah.
You know, how great would it be? You know, and again, nothing has been talked about. But how great would it be to see Hammerstone and Graves take on Jacob and Sefa Fatu in the main event of a Future Shock?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? How would that not be on TV?
Yeah. In fact, as soon as you said that Jacob Fatu is going to be out here with GCW, I knew where you're going with that right away. That just would be amazing. And that's the best thing, too, is I love the fact, and I'll always say this, you still see things through the fans' eyes, and I think that's one of the biggest reasons that FSW is so successful, is because a lot of promoters, you know, they just see it through what they want to see it as, and, you know, promote their buddies and, you know, do it for money or whatever the fuck it is. You run it as a business, very successful business, very good reputation business, and yet you still have the heart of a fan, and I think that is what conveys in being able to see these great matches. It's amazing. Really quick, let's talk about the 20th. Anything else on the women's card as of right now?
Yeah, right now we have the FSW Women's Champion, Lacey Ryan. She is going to defend against Ruby Reyes.
Nice.
We have CMLL superstar Estralita. She will take on Miranda Alizé.
Nice.
Katarina Winter, whatever you call her, you know, whichever name you prefer. She's going to wrestle Delilah Doom.
Oh, nice.
We have Sandra Moon going up against CeCe Chanel, the former Simone Cherie, who works also on Primetime Live.
Yeah.
Bryn Thorne, who made a surprise appearance last week. She will be on the card, as well as a couple of our newcomers, Strella and Alice Blair. But, you nice. Know, right now we're just, you know, trying to put together a strong show. We're, you know, we're working on a couple of more females to finalize the card. But, you know, right now we're working on an opponent from Maserati. So, you know, so the mainstays of FSW will be here, as well as some of the best talent from Southern California that we're looking to bring in.
Real quick, you brought up Maserati. Is how would it be like as a promoter? Would you be able to turn to OVW and say, "Hey, we have a card. Can she defend her women's championship, the OVW Women's Championship, at this card?" Does that ever happen in terms of your the way you work with other promoters and promotions?
Well, when I try to work with other promotions, the main thing is I love to give out, but I need to get back.
Right.
You know, being the OVW champion and having her defend on my show helps OVW more than it helps me. But if we're going to do something together, it's kind of like the deal we worked out with Dave Marquez. You know, for years we've gone back and forth and back and forth. And finally, we reached an agreement that we feel is going to help us huge. But he's doing it because he feels it's going to help him huge. In the past, it was both different ways. Sometimes he felt it wasn't really a benefit to him. Sometimes I thought, this doesn't really do much for me. And, you know, my son Joey is very passionate about trying to work with other companies. And I get that. And we're talking with some great companies, WAC out of you know, California and Defy and other companies out of Washington. And of course we have a good relationship with Dom at Arizona with his Phoenix Championship Wrestling. And again, I would love to do that, but again, it needs to be beneficial to us.
Right.
You know, I remember we did a Beers and Body Slams and Sin Bodhi, I believe, was the OVW Anarchy champion. And he defended the title on the show. We didn't air it on TV. It was a Beers and Body Slams. So how beneficial was it to OVW?
Right.
You know what I mean? It didn't increase our ticket sales, but we're also in a position to where you're seeing it everywhere now. Where an EC3 could show up on Impact. He could show up on NWA or AEW. Thunder Rosa's defending the NWA belt on an AEW show and then losing it on Primetime Live to an AEW woman who now defends it the next week on AEW. See, WWE is here, and everybody else is around here. Now, to increase the awareness, because NWA has their fans who tuned into Power, and it was a YouTube-only show that was universally praised.
Yeah.
Okay? Then you got Impact. They're on a smaller station. I'm not even sure where they're on in on the cable network world, but they got a subscribership, YouTube. They have the best indie guys around, you know, from the Chris Bays and Callahans and the Rascals and Eddie Edwards and Eric Young's back and, you know, all the women they got on their show and the tag teams, Motor City Machine Guns are back. Amazing talent on the show, you know, and then you got Ring of Honor, and then they work with New Japan, where a guy like Carl Fredericks gets to be showcased on both shows.
Yep.
But then you got Chris Bay, who's on Impact, who's going to get to be on the New Japan Super J Cup.
Yeah.
That also features our own TJ Perkins.
Yeah.
And so everybody is working together because wrestling fans are wrestling fans. In the past, you were either a WWE fan or you were a WCW fan, or you're an ECW fan.
Yeah.
With the advent of NXT, it really helped the wrestling fans in the world because, like I would say, I would hand out a flyer, and unless a Matt Hardy was on it, most people didn't give a shit. They'd see a guy like Hammerstone or Cross, and they may look good, but they never heard of him. Who cares? Out of mind, out of sight. Who the fuck are they? Nobody gives a shit.
Right.
But now, because of NXT, all of a sudden you got the Undisputed Era, Adam Cole, who's this guy, and Bobby Fish, and Kyle O'Reilly, and then Keith Lee. And these are all indie darlings.
Yeah.
So whether it's Ring of Honor, so now you got a lot of NXT fans who now watch Ring of Honor because of what they've provided. Then you got the indie circuit that's numerous guys, the Timothy Thatchers, the Walters. You know, they've cornered the market in Europe. It's made the traditional, you know, blinders on WWE fan only care about WWE, talk about how shitty it is, but still not pay attention to anything else. Now, we work with Primetime Live. Lacey Ryan tonight is defending the women's FSW Women's Championship.
Right.
FSW's RMB, they'll be wrestling on the show tonight. Against a team that's really made inklings and want to come out here, and I hear really good things, 4 minutes of heat.
Yeah.
Okay, I know they worked a lot with, I believe the Ricky Gibson kid worked a lot with Cody up in Oregon in the past. So they have a good relationship, and they'd really love to come to Vegas. They love to travel. They want to get seen by as many eyes as possible.
Yeah.
So the more eyes that get seen from each company helps the growth because – we're not a billion-dollar company. None of us are. Even if you talk about Ring of Honor, maybe because of Sinclair, and Impact's got great investors that put up a lot of money, but the bottom line is everybody needs fans. Everybody needs to sell pay-per-views, you know, whether ours are, you know, $15 on Fight or, you know, $9.99, the women's show that we're doing, you know. Every sale is important to us, yeah. Whether it's 47 or 126 or 588, you know, WWE isn't successful in the past unless they sold 150,000 pay-per-views and they probably would complain about it. But, you know, for us, 100 and something pay-per-views is a big deal for a company that's just based out of Vegas. But for us to expand, we also need to expand our fan base. And because of the Twitter and the Instagram and the Twitch stuff, hopefully more people are being aware of FSW, the company from Vegas, not the Vegas company.
Right. All right. So final question before we call it a night, and that is they just revealed this week Kevin Cross's first action figure. Do you think Kevin's going to send you one?
I think he's going to give me the link to purchase it.
Yeah, yeah.
But I would be more than happy to purchase them if he will sign them free of charge.
Well, that's been put out into the world, so now we'll see.
I know he's going to be listening, so, you know.
Oh, he's a dead...
Remy Marcello will make sure he tells Cross to check out the DeFalco files as we talk about Karrion Kross's first action figure. Looks a lot like him.
It does. Yeah, they did a good job. You know, that's what
we're trying to get our own.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. When are we going to see a vintage Crash Test Cody action figure that we can get?
Well, the problem is finding somebody who can do it relatively inexpensively.
Yeah.
As I've stated before, Jeff Dino at SoCal Pro years ago had Johnny Yuma, Johnny Goodtime, Ricky Mandel, and I believe like SoCal Crazy. And they were really good action figures. And I remember messaging him because at the time, guys like the Reno Scum and Funny Bone, who were regulars, these guys traveled all over the place.
Right.
So these figures were like $12 each, okay, which was pretty good. But you had to buy like a minimum of 50. But if you bought like 75 of them, they were like $6 or $7 each. And wow. It was like I was ready to pounce because we could have split it with Funny Bone because, hey, Funny Bone or Reno Scum, we'll sell it at our shows and you could take yours and sell them everywhere else. So for 75, all I want is 25. You get 50 and you pay X amount of dollars and you can now sell them for 20, 25 bucks. They even came in a box that basically had the figure, you know. Since I'm here, it's like my kid's Unmatched Fury. It came in a box.
Right.
That this one happens to be Shawn Michaels.
Right.
Because of our relationship, my kid got the autographed Jeff and Matt Hardy ones, you know, that is available if the price is right. But the thing was, you could have got the whole package if you bought 75 of each for like $10.
Wow.
And... you know, we had a guy at the mall, Sin Bodhi ended up getting one done. It was the 3D figures. And unfortunately, you know, I had messaged like my Rolodex of people and it was like, oh yeah, definitely interested. Definitely interested. I remember like a month and a half after the fact, Tommy Dreamer sent me a message. He's like, oh yeah, these are really cool. I'm interested. But the guy was kind of flaky and the material is great if you take it, unwrap it, and put it on your counter. The problem is for wrestlers to sell them, they have to put it on a carry bag or wherever, and they broke easy. Little chips, the arm, whatever it is, you know, and the price point was too high.
Right.
And as a collector's item, that's fine, but there wasn't much of a profit at $80 or $90 each.
Right.
So, like, through Sin, obviously Jake the Snake Roberts would be able to sell them, especially signed for $150, easily. Especially if he only did 25 of them and it was a pose, whatever it was.
Right.
You know? But the problem was Jake would have to bring those 50 figures on him onto an airplane and set it up and take it down and set it up. And the odds of, you know, a decent amount of them breaking was too high.
Right.
So, you know, we're on the lookout, you know. That's the one thing that merch-wise, you know, we could work a good deal with our fans as well as our wrestlers. Because some of the wrestlers are possessive of their own merchandise, but because of the price points, we could sell them here. They could sell them there. They keep everything there. We give them a split of what we get here, but we're kind of involved in it all together.
Right.
So, you know, I've had numerous people think they might have somebody, but, you know, we're still in that process. And especially with the relaunch and once we get to be able to hopefully do some bigger and better shows, we're going to see. GCW is claiming they're going to be able to do a show indoors with a 250-person limit. At, I believe it's called Meet Las Vegas. I'm not aware of the place. The initial place they were going to do was going to be outside. And I told them, I'm like, bro, it's fucking December 5th. It's going to be 25 degrees here. It's going to be really hard to get people to want to come out. Like I said, we did the Halloween show, and it was 40 degrees. And there was some miserable bastards there that were pissed off about being at the show.
Yeah.
Even mainly the wrestlers.
Yeah.
So...
Well,
so, yeah, there's so much on the agenda. It's like, imagine what we'd be doing if, you know, things were easy to do.
Right.
You know, we're doing so much Twitch Monday through Friday. Now we're doing live stream every single day. And, you know, I'll pop up every once in a while and bust balls and talk the shit, which, you know, some people love and think it's hilarious. And others get offended too easily and fucking bothers them. Oh, well, don't listen if you don't like it.
Well, that's... Sometimes it works. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And everyone, please, if you're watching, listening, please check out the Twitch feed. There's great content, which is fabulous, because a lot of times when you see a lot of wrestling companies try something, they just don't have the content to do it, but the creativity is there and the content is there. So I urge,
or the quality content. That's the most important. There's people who have good production, but they got, Eddie Schmo against Ricky Loser. You know what I mean? And it's like, how often can you watch that? Like, you could tune in and name, you know, every star of the last 10 years that wasn't in the WWE or Impact or Ring of Honor 10 years ago, and you could pretty much find a match of theirs here at FSW.
Yep.
And that's not counting like Hammerstone, Cross, and Bay, and Ricker, Eli Drake, and Brian Cage, and the Reno Scum. You know, we're talking guys like Matt Hardy and Kevin Nash and, you know, Apollo Crews. You know, the Young Bucks, Matt Sydal, Pentagon, Phoenix, like everybody that you love as a wrestler. It's because I love him as a wrestler, and I try to get everybody. Fuck, we had Jon Moxley at a school show. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, there's so much there. It's like, check out before they were stars. They were future stars. That should be a shirt, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
I like that.
Yeah, I do too, man. I like that a lot.
Before they were stars in little, they were future stars.
Yeah. Yeah.
We've got a new shirt.
Yeah, absolutely. With the little FSW logo at, you know, the bottom under future stars, or even on the top of the back.
And now we can get guys like Sepha and Class and Jordan Cruz and all the great young talent that we have.
Yeah.
They can parade that shirt.
I think that's, it's fun just, looking at some of the stuff that comes up like that in terms of the ideas of figures or t-shirts or, you know, different concepts. That's one of the best things. And I hope that people who watch or listen... Please support by, you know, if you ever see something coming out that's new. I know the fan base here does, you know, you'll catch shirts. You walk around town, you'll see different shirts of, some of the wrestlers who are Future Stars Wrestling wrestlers. But let's see it nationwide. Let's see it worldwide. So if you like what you see, please support FSW, support the wrestlers by taking the time to look up, you know, merchandise and get something to support the industry, especially since this whole year has been kind of fucked by the pandemic. Finally, Joe, as we say goodbye, when you think about the TV production and how it's going, do you have an official start date set in stone?
Yes. November 21st, not this coming Saturday, next Saturday, we will be debuting on MyLVTV. We believe, you know, unless we hear otherwise, everything's been done. We're a little bit long, so we're trying to get confirmation. Me and Joey sat around for 2 hours to cut down the time.
Wow.
Because, oh, you know, they talked about five matches, and moving forward, four per taping is probably going to be the number, four matches per TV show.
Yeah.
Just because, especially on the first one, there's not as much outside content, and five was too much to begin with.
Sure.
So, and with the shows we're taping, we're not going to have Unguided and Death Proof go 8 minutes. So that's going to be a long match, you know. There might only be three matches on that show because that match could go 30 minutes.
Right.
For all we know. You know, so the idea to operate the vignettes and the interviews and, you know, even though our heavyweight champion won't be on for a bit, you know, we'll have a sit-down interview with the champ. You know, we'll talk to Hammerstone. We'll talk to the key players in the game. You know, once we're down to the semifinals, you know, we'll talk to all four guys exclusively about what it would mean for them to be the Nevada State champion. So there's a lot of other content because, as I said, as good as matches are, there's a million shows that have a million good matches.
Yeah.
If you're an AEW fan, no matter what they do, you love it. If you're a WWE fan, no matter what they do, you love it.
Right.
Well, we need more. No matter what we do, the FSW community loves it. But we need to reach out to a lot more people than that FSW community. They need to know who Ice Williams is. Who's Funny Bone? Why do we like Hammerstone and Graves and Remy Marcel and this new kid, Hero Lou, who looks like a million bucks? You know, why do we hate Ricky Tenacious? He's a piece of shit. I hate this guy. I want to see him get his ass beat. Action Braxton. He's a fucking pest. You know, have to get involved in every match. I want to see somebody beat the shit out of this dude.
Yeah.
And then when I hear him talk, I really want somebody to beat his ass. I want somebody to come out while he's talking and beat the shit out of
him. Yeah.
That's what we need our fans to want. And then we need to provide it because, sure, we can do five matches at 9 minutes apiece. Thank you and good night.
Yeah.
And there's no development. There's no story. You know, those are the most important things. It's like Shogun and Ricky Tenacious. It is a match that is done to make Shogun look like the future star he is going to be, but also establish the character of who Ricky Tenacious is.
Yeah.
Instead of just some guy who's wrestling this monster who's a tag team champion.
Yeah.
We need to get across that this annoying fucker is about to get his ass beat by this big monster who's waiting to defend the tag titles and showcase him on a show, even though Kenny's unavailable because at the time he's at Ring of Honor, which is his number one priority. So, you know, that is the key, getting people to want to tune in. And that's why our fans are hooked, because there are stories.
Yep.
You know, a lot of times it's hard because our stories continue over numerous things. So there's going to be missing ingredients. So if we do something at Future Shock with the Suavecitos that leads to their match with the Bad Bitches, well, if you didn't come to the show, you didn't really know about it. So now we're probably going to have to do a little bit more on the recap stuff of, hey, this is what happened. Kind of like with Ice and Funny Bone.
Yeah.
We go back to the Mecca show where after Ice Williams retained the title, Funny Bone took him out and made it known that he wants to take out Ice Williams. So now we have to use stuff from March and then stuff that we did recently at the school, splice it all together and put together a video package of why you want to see Ice Williams and Funny Bone.
Yeah.
And then decide who you like. Oh, this young cocky kid, Ice Williams. Man, he's an arrogant fucking prick. But I'll tell you what, he's fucking good. You know, I never heard of him before, this FSW, but this guy can go.
Yeah.
And then Funny Bone's been around forever, in the best shape of his life.
Yeah.
Two-time World Image champion. He don't give a fuck. You know, he comes out, we're going to probably have to beep out shit when he talks. You know, I don't know which we prefer, him to talk and we don't understand what he's saying, or him talking and we have to edit half of it out.
Oh, man. Well, this is, it's an exciting time. Again, fans here in Las Vegas, or even, you know, if you know of anyone in Las Vegas, fans, please spread the word that November 21st, this is
like the wildfires of California. Spread the word.
Spread the word. Exactly. Exactly. Because it just starts with a little ember and boom, just blows up. So we want to see it explode. And again, thank you, Joe, for your time today. Thank you, people who are listening, who are watching. Again, you know, follow FSW on the social media, on Twitch, on Fight TV, on YouTube. Just make sure that, you know, you're looking out for the new stuff that's going to be coming down the road here on TV as well. And, you know, it's an exciting time. For as shitty as 2020 has been and as long as it's felt, now the steam in the locomotive is starting to roll, and hopefully, you know, 2021 is just going to be a not just get back to normal, but expand it and, you know, see shit explode, man. Because
I'll tell you what, though, it's going to be less humorous without Donald Trump around. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, we're not too sure that he's not going to be around.
That's true.
And, Joe, have you thought maybe if he's available, you could just put him in the FSW Hall of Fame just to have him do a one-off?
Absolutely. I know Sam Adonis has a Make America Great Again gimmick. Maybe maybe he'll want to come in and manage Sam Adonis.
Adonis? Oh, on that note, everyone, please have a great rest of your day, and we'll see you next time, everybody.